Trump administration policies related to refugees, travelers from certain majority Muslim nations, and undocumented immigrants have renewed tensions related to how the U.S. views people who weren't born in this country. And many U.S. citizens are also feeling unsettled and on the defensive because there appears to be growing comfort with attacking those who may look differently. Those attacks could be physical or emotional or via social media. So where are we as a nation when it comes to how we treat immigrants and what value we place on diversity? Joining me to talk about those concepts are Norma Jimenez-Hernandez, professor of psychology at Estrella Mountain Community College, and Julian Lim, history professor at ASU. Julian, I want to start the conversation with you. One word that comes to mind when there's negativity toward immigrants is scapegoat. And though the U.S. has the reputation for being a melting pot, there's also a history of being unkind toward immigrants at times. How long has that been a part of this country?
So, I mean, it's basically since the founding of the country. I mean, what's surprising to lots of Americans, I think, is that we are supposed to be this nation of immigrants. We celebrate that as part of our kind of foundational identity. But actually, from the very beginning, there's been a lot of contestations about who belongs. And the older settled populations get to be make some certain kinds of claims to the United States. And it tends to be at the cost of immigrants. So you see it from very, very early on.
Is this human nature to be afraid of someone who doesn't look like me, doesn't act like me? Is that where this comes from, or is there something even deeper than that?
Well, I think you have a manifestation of fear of the other, of the unknown. Mm-hmm. I think that's, to a certain extent, I guess, natural, if you wanted to use that term. But I think we're also socialized to fear the other. And it is because it is an unknown. And one of the things that I'm also an anthropologist by training, is that, you know, we tend to see that when we encounter something novel, something new, there is trepidation in that, whether it's you're meeting someone that's different than you, whether you're having a new experience. You know, many of my students come back to school as for their second career, or, you know, the average age of community college students is 24. And so there's this fear, even though they've known how to be a student, they don't remember how to be a student. And so when you encounter something that's different, and I think that's the value of why, you know, we want our children to be exposed to different types of groups, different types of experiences. So that fear that they have about this unknown experience then is, you know what, I'm going to learn something from this and it's going to be okay. I think we want to have people take these risks and not be so afraid of the other. Mm-hmm. And what you really find out in those types of situations, it's not as bad as you thought it was. And you find greater common ground when we begin to talk, when we begin to have conversations, when we take that step out into the ledge and we jump off and say, it's not that bad. And so to go back to your original question, you know, is it human nature? I think we socialize people to fear. And we're in this political and social climate where those fires have been lit and they're being fanned and they're being, you know, we just saw from the Southern Poverty Law Center this rise in hate groups in the last year alone. Mm-hmm. Why is that happening? Who's behind that? I think those are the important questions we have to ask.
As our society becomes more diverse, one would think that's good. We're going to be more welcoming. But does that cause other people to sort of dig their heels in even more to say, well, now there are even more people who aren't like me?
We've created a space, a political space, for people who are against that diversity to be able to speak out and to be legitimized. Mm. I mean, that's what's been happening. Younger people today, and I love to be around young people because they have this optimism. They are more open now to diversity, and however it is that you define diversity, than ever before, than we've ever been before. Mm. Older generations aren't as much. And so I think we're going to begin to see a shift. And so when we have surveyed college students, and we've done surveys like this at Estrella Mountain Community College, we find that the myths that older people have about immigrants or undocumented college students or the poor, or the home, you know, whatever group it is, mm-hmm. they're a lot more open to those experiences. Part of it, I think, has to do with access to information in a way that we've never had before. Older people are more difficult in that respect because they really have dug in. And now we've created a space where they say, well, you can, that's okay. We legitimize your feelings of discrimination. Mm-hmm. And it made me think about this issue, these two different hypotheses that are at odds. We have the conflict hypothesis that says, well, if we put people that are diverse together, then it's going to strengthen some of their stereotypes and they're going to dig in and it's going to be worse off. Or the contact hypothesis, which is if we create spaces for people to come together, for children to be in desegregated schools, for example, well, then maybe that's going to be better. it's a lot more complicated than that. It's not as simple as you just throw a group of diverse people together, put them in a room, and they're going to get along. And in fact, we have the empirical research to show that. Students who go to schools that are have been desegregated, that are diverse, and by diverse I don't mean 99% African-American or 99% Latino, where mm-hmm. you have a good mix of different ethnic groups. But the parents and the teachers and the community never talk about issues of race, and that becomes key. They're not as malleable, they're not as open to different groups as kids who go to schools that are not as diverse, but the parents and the teachers have these conversations with them. So it's not enough to simply say, let's desegregate this environment, or let's have this experience, or let's go to a different country and experience what that is, and somehow it's magically going to happen that you're going to be open to other groups. You have to begin that difficult conversation about the other. What does this mean? Why were you uncomfortable? What are those biases that we have implicitly that perhaps we don't want to recognize?
Something that I've been thinking about a lot is how, you know, with the election of President Obama, we thought we, you know, that was sort of the celebratory mm-hmm. post-racial moment, mm-hmm. and clearly we're not. But something that also comes up in my classroom is when we do start talking about race, and I push the students to get out of their comfort zone. I mean, it's clear that they're very uncomfortable because they were taught not to talk mm-hmm. about race because it right. seems to be like we're not supposed to recognize it, right? This is the part of the right. the problem of being sort of colorblind
right.
today. And so there's no vocabulary for students or for Americans, I think, more generally, to talk about these hard issues that are still like part of our reality, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you look outside and watch the news, you realize there's all these social issues that seem to have racial dimensions to them. But how do yeah. we explain that if we can't talk about race? And that's something that students and lots of Americans, I think, are grappling with. But the other thing is, for me, what's fascinating is this idea that we're so diverse, and that diversity is by itself should be kind of a utopian reality, right? Should by itself just produce this kind of like thing. But it takes work. Mm-hmm. And I yeah. think that's what we've been missing, is that the work that we have to put into it to kind of understand that diversity.
When it comes to government sanctioning, or the feel that a president or others may not be endorsing it but aren't doing anything to really try to counter some of these negative feelings toward immigrants or others, how much can we learn about ourselves as greater Americans? I don't mean the three of us in this room, but 350 million people, on how, as a majority, we or they react. There was the incident with the Jewish cemetery, and a Muslim group came over to try to help rebuild. And those things like that are very inspiring. But in a general sense, do you think as citizens of this country, we're willing, a majority of us are willing to do that sort of thing? Or is it more like, well, it's not really affecting me yet, so I have my own business to take care of?
I'm optimistic, and okay. I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because when you have such turmoil, when you have such trepidation as to what's going to happen in our democracy, I see pockets of hope. I see individuals mobilizing. Michael Pollack over at UC San Diego, Bridget Terry Long, people, Dorinda Carter at Michigan State, who are creating energy. And you're having people become involved that would not normally have been involved in this democratic process. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's an opportunity for things to shift where we do have those genuine conversations. It's not going to be easy, but people are becoming engaged. My father is becoming engaged in the way he never did in this political discourse and saying, what are we going to do about this? I said, you're absolutely right. What are you going to do about this? He said, well, I'm going to go and talk to some of my friends and let's see what we can do and let's start a petition or whatever it is. My sister's a middle school teacher. You know, she's doing this with her students. And she normally does some of this work, but they're becoming very excited about the effect that they could have. And so even though it seems like there's gloom and doom as to what's going to happen, what direction we're heading in, I also see a lot of energy and in terms of people just really embracing what it means to be a citizen in this democracy if we want to maintain a democracy.
I am optimistic because I do see a lot of energy. Just the number of people who are getting involved now is just amazing. It's kind mm-hmm. of mind-blowing. But my only hesitation is that there are still inequalities in terms of the enthusiasm with which mm-hmm. people are devoting themselves to different causes. So even if it's about immigration, the travel ban, the so-called Muslim travel ban, right, that has generated a massive outpouring of support from all kinds of Americans. But there's been this sort of escalation of immigrants and policies from the administration, you know, this fear of mass deportation, this targeting of undocumented immigrants, and we're not seeing that same kind of mobilization around mm-hmm. that issue. I think that's a harder thing to kind of capture, why that's sympathy or mobilization isn't happening is a harder question to get at. But there are these differences, and so that's where I'm a little bit troubled.
Julian Lim is a history professor at ASU. I was also speaking with Norma Jimenez-Hernandez, professor of psychology at Estrella Mountain Community College. We were talking about sentiment toward immigrants in the U.S.